SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. He is the mastermind of the pigskin. That is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. 1 hour together up until 1 p.m. Eastern time. And although it might be June 24th, and you maybe are thinking to yourself, whew, we're a far way away from football. The NFL teams, after their offseason programs culminating in mandatory minicamp, are now on summer break, off until we get to late July and we start to report for training camp. College football feels a little bit out. Fall camp not here just yet. Media days just a little bit under a month away. Lisi, we're 2 months away. Exactly. Today is Monday, June 24th. The start of the college football season is Saturday, August 24th. We are exactly 2 months out from week zero, a smaller week zero slate, but we'll examine it on this Monday here on Football Full Circle and some NFL news from earlier today and the weekend that was to bring you as well.
Yes, 60 days away or 61 days away from the start of the college football season, Ben. Nothing better. We kick it off, and I love that we start it before the Labor Day weekend, right? That Labor Day weekend slate is going to be unbelievable in terms of the top 25 battles that we do have, LSU and USC. We also see Clemson and Georgia, and then once fall camp starts, the quarterback battles, the teams that potentially could surprise, the teams that maybe disappoint. Those are all the conversations that we will be having right prior to the start of the NFL season, which kicks off second week of September. So that's the best thing about college football, right? We're going to, what, in about another month, we get EA Sports, EA 25. Yeah. We might have to have a house party for that to kick it off with the College Football Today crew. You never know. A little tourney action. You know, get that Air Force offense involved, Ben.
Oh, get them involved indeed. And Lisi Guy, you are correct. Less than a month out from when that is released, EA Sports College Football 25 on July 19th. So a lot to look forward to. Anyway, we start in the National Football League with some housekeeping and some tidying up and some NFL news from earlier today. The Green Bay Packers will have a new CEO and team president next year following the retirement of current CEO and team president Mark Murphy. The Green Bay Packers' current COO, Chief Operating Officer and General Counsel, Ed Policy, will take over as the team's next president. Of course, Joe, the Green Bay Packers, a unique institution in terms of professional sports. There is not one singular owner. It is owned by the community, if you will. So the team president and CEO acts as that de facto representative as the singular team owner. So it is a big day from that perspective. Ed Policy will take over for the Pack.
Yeah, optimism on the horizon, right? Especially if they could sign their quarterback, Jordan Love, to a multi-year deal, keep him there in Green Bay. They could have the face of the franchise for the next 5 to 10 seasons, and that's what it's all about. You know, you think about the dynamic of the Green Bay Packers, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Super Bowl wins for both of those players. Is there one on the horizon potentially for Jordan Love, right? There's a lot of young talent in Green Bay. They have a very good young head coach. I think under the radar coach, because I don't think he gets enough credit in terms of Matt LaFleur, always prepared, coached up that team last year, had San Francisco potentially on the ropes. They lose it by 3, but hey, they're one of the front runners potentially to challenge the San Francisco 49ers as being the best team in the NFC, and we'll see how it plays out. I love the fact that the fans are involved and own the team. Yeah. It's almost like a Roger Goodell type of situation, right? Policy will take over for the fan base, not just the organization.
Yeah, the NFL's only publicly owned franchise. That is the Green Bay Packers. And currently, Mark Murphy is the team's president and CEO. He will retire in 2025. And, Lisi, you brought up a time of optimism for Green Bay. wasn't necessarily the case the last few off seasons or even at the end of last year, as they were caught up in the Aaron Rodgers drama that is now ensuing for the New York Jets. If you remember the last few off seasons, would Rodgers retire? Would he stay in Green Bay? There were reports around the 2022 NFL draft about Aaron Rodgers' future with this Packers organization. Even prior to that, back in 2021, what exactly would happen? The schism over the Jordan Love draft decision between Aaron Rodgers and the Packers front office led by general manager Brian Gutekunst. So much drama, Joe, that really kind of reached its peak as Aaron Rodgers decided to leave Green Bay, where he spent the first 18 years of his NFL career to head to the Jets organization. And then it went from drama in March to uncertainty. What would Jordan Love present? In some of the few bits of action we saw Love under Aaron Rodgers when he was the backup behind Aaron in Green Bay, it wasn't overly optimistic for the 2020 first round draft pick, but they had really kind of set the standard in Green Bay of three decades of consistent and successful quarterback play, where Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench for 3 years behind Brett Favre before he became starting quarterback number one, and Jordan Love really followed suit. But at this point last offseason, Joe, uncertainty around the quarterback position, around the future of the Green Bay Packers, it was a new era, their first in nearly two decades without Aaron Rodgers. And so it felt a little bit uneasy, if you will, to only at this point, I would say, be fully positive and optimistic entering 2024 for all of the reasons you highlighted under Jordan Love.
Yeah, I think sometimes an organization needs to take two steps back potentially to go, you know, 10 steps forward. And I use the example of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, right? That marriage was sort of scorned, it you know, worn out its welcome, and Tom Brady moved on to Tampa Bay, and what happened? They all of a sudden won a Super Bowl in regards to his first year there, and New England is still searching for answers, has a new head coach, but does have new optimism potentially with their new quarterback Drake May, right? So it didn't work out that way with Mac Jones. There were growing pains. Now, Green Bay does have the benefit of having Jordan Love sit behind Aaron Rodgers. He stepped up. We talked about his productivity. One of the hottest quarterbacks at the end of the regular season with Baker Mayfield led his team to a playoff win over Dallas, a very good Dallas team. Almost knocked off the NFC champion 49ers in their house. And you have all of those playmakers there. All of those young receivers and a young quarterback to grow with for the next 4 or 5 seasons, there could be potentially multiple NFC championships that this team could attain. Can they live up to the expectation now that they set last year? That's up to LaFleur and that's up to Jordan Love to really showcase his talent in his sophomore season.
And Joe, you were one of the first, I really think, to kind of highlight how great Jordan Love was in the home stretch of the 2023 NFL season. 6 of those final 8 games, throwing for 250 yards or more. 18 touchdowns to only one INT in those last 8 games of Green Bay season a year ago, in which they won 6 of the 8 to earn that postseason berth. And of course, Jordan Love sensational in that super wild card round game in Dallas, the upset over the Cowboys, 16 of 21, 271 yards and two touchdowns, playing very clean football. You have to be optimistic, and if you're Ed Policy, you have to be happy to be inheriting one of the most prestigious franchises in all of the National Football League. Really, in American sports, it represents that idea of Americana within the NFL on a time that feels like it's very favorable for the Green Bay Packers. As you look at Green Bay this year, just from the odds perspective, and you see where Green Bay stands, the win total right now for Green Bay has them favored to win double-digit games, 9.5, that win total over at minus 138. Joe, do you have them pegged for a 10-win football team, bare minimum?
I do, and I have them winning the division again this year. Wow. I was on them last year. They show me no reason why they can't challenge Detroit, and that's not a knock on Detroit. It's just that now they're the hunted as opposed to the huntee. I like Jordan Love's chances.
Only 60 cents separates the Green Bay Packers and the Detroit Lions, plus 135 for Detroit. The Lions booked as the favorites. The Packers, plus 195. A little bit more around the National Football League comes your way up next from the weekend it was before we go to college football here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on FFC, it is Football Full Circle. Lisi Guy, a couple of days ago, the New England Patriots signed Ramondre Stevenson to a four-year extension worth $36 million, including $17 million guaranteed. Ramondre Stevenson will remain in New England under first-year head coach Gerard Mayo. I'm sure you guys had some of these discussions on Friday as things were going around Football Full Circle, but I do think it is worthy to discuss once again. Because Ramondre Stevenson, Joe, might be the best offensive weapon that New England has for first-year and rookie quarterback Drake May, which does make things precarious. And I was having this conversation this weekend with a couple of my friends as I was at a wedding this weekend, but with a couple of diehard NFL fans, one being a big Chicago Bears fan. And I made the statement that I think when all is said and done, Drake May might end up as the second-best quarterback out of this 2024 draft class. And his retort was, but I thought behind Caleb Williams, but his retort even was, it's going to be interesting, though, because they haven't really surrounded him with offensive talent in New England. Making sure that you hold on to Ramondre Stevenson is a start, but it's still going to be a very tough transition for Drake May.
Absolutely, and let's be honest, right? I mean, Ramondre Stevenson is a very good back. He's not an elite back. He's not a breakaway back. He's a plodder. That's his size. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to bash him, but there's no difference to when Samaje Perine came out of Oklahoma and played his days in Cincinnati and, the journeyman. To me, Ramondre Stevenson doesn't move the dial, Ben. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. Zeke Elliott was probably a little bit more productive at the end of the regular season than Stevenson. I know he got hurt, and was nicked up, but come on. I mean, it's good, and I agree with you. Again, we're putting Drake May into the same position that Mac Jones was, and I'm not supporting Mac Jones. He didn't step up. He looked like a deer in the headlights at the end of last season, okay? He was battered multiple times. But again, it goes into the fact of if you want to assess a quarterback, you put playmakers around them, you put him into a scheme that he's comfortable with and let him operate. And if he doesn't perform in terms of that type of situation, then you move on. What you see is what you get. You can't guess, well, he's a good pocket passer, but he has no weapons. He can roll out, but we don't call plays to his strengths. I mean, that's absolutely asinine and ridiculous. It's a good signing to have a veteran in the backfield, but again, it's not going to help them win games unless they plan on running it 90 times per matchup.
Yeah, you know what's fascinating about the New England Patriots and what this means for Ramondre Stevenson is they actually, Joe, have the lowest win total in the National Football League for 2024. 4.5. That's the number in New England. Of course, a lot of changes this offseason. But 4.5, the over does have the juice at -162. That is the lowest win total in all of the NFL. And the Pats have the second longest price to win Super Bowl 59 at 250-1, only in front of the Panthers, who are 300-1. And what I find interesting about New England having the shorter of the two win totals, or the lower of the two win totals, is the fact the Pats are at 4.5, the Panthers are 5.5. The over has the juice in Carolina, but the Panthers play in the easier conference and yet have the longer price to win a Super Bowl. It's just an interesting conundrum there, but I think even speaks to how poor this year is predicted to be for the Patriots. First year under Gerard Mayo, a rookie quarterback in Drake May, likely to become the starter. I believe Jacoby Brissett is back in New England as well. We'll see if he kind of takes the veteran approach to leading the reins of this New England team. But again, you would think that if you drafted Drake May third overall, more than likely at some point you're going to put him be tested by the fires of the National Football League. It's just a tough spot this year, I think, for New England.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's, you know, you have a rookie coach with, again, you know, a different potential scheme, different system, new offensive coordinator. New, you know, when you see, have a new coordinator, they see the game through a different set of eyes. And again, you lose that coaching aspect, right? You lose the edge of what Bill Belichick had. You can't argue game planner. Maybe he was at the end of the rope, but he's still one of, an above average game planner and would beat up on the New York Jets for a multitude of his career, even though he lost his last game. So it comes down to, I don't see this team building 2-3 years out, Ben. I really don't. I mean, I think Gerard Mayo might be the face of the franchise 4 seasons down the road, but you got to get him talent there. You got to give him 3 years to develop that type of foundation. I mean, the cupboard was completely bare offensively. I mean, we don't know what Drake May is, okay? We know what the wide receivers are. We know what the running back situation is. If you don't have elite speed on the outside, you're not going to beat anybody. Look at the division that you're in. Now you have Keon Coleman, right? You have the James Cook. You have all the weapons in Buffalo, Miami, Waddle and Hill, right? I mean, the list goes on and on. The Jets have Garrett Wilson. Where's the elite playmaker for New England? Douglas?
Yep.
Johnson? I mean, come on. It's terrible. So do you see it changing this year? No. Do you see it changing next year? Maybe. Maybe after a draft class, which means the dividends don't come until year three. So I'm with you.
Yeah,
I'm selling
really
the 4.5.
No, I mean, I completely agree. I'm just going to echo what you said right there. 4-13 a season ago would have been under this win total, by far the worst year of Bill Belichick's tenure in New England. Only year number one under Belichick, way back in 2000, did they have a losing record outside of that, or excuse me, a 5-11 record before the Tom Brady era. It's the only time they've even flirted with what would be a win total of 4.5. They haven't won less than 4 games, which you would think might be in play with the lowest win total in the league since 1992, a 2-14 season for the Patriots. They haven't had back-to-back losing seasons in a very long time after this year. I guess they were 8-9 in 2022, so back-to-back in 2022 and 2023. 3 consecutive losing seasons. You'd have to go all the way back to 1992 through 1990. Kids my age, Joe, Patriots fans that are 32 years old or younger have never seen their franchise be below 500 for 3 consecutive seasons. But that seems to be in line this year in New England. A couple of college football conversations is what you can expect when we return. Up next, live right here on Football Full Circle. Stay with us all across the Sports Grid Radio Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. We are exactly 2 months away from the very first Saturday of the college football season. Now, week zero this year, Joe, not as good as it has been the past few years, where the slate was really strong to start off a season. This year, not quite as much, but still couple of big programs and some big debut games, and that is exactly what we are 2 months away from. Today is Monday, June 24th, 2024. 2 months exactly from now is August 24th, 2024. That's week zero. That's the first Saturday of the college football season. The two games that really highlight the marquee on that opening Saturday, the Dublin debut of Georgia Tech and Florida State, FSU 12.5-point favorite against the Yellow Jackets. Then the nightcap over in Reno. It's Nevada taking on SMU, the first game for the Mustangs as a member of the ACC. Of course, not a conference game, but now an ACC football program. Joe, let's start with the Dublin debut between Florida State and Georgia Tech. Nearly a 2-touchdown spread in favor of the Seminoles, who of course will be looked at this year as the favorites to win the ACC, given how last year played out. Perfect 13-0. champions of the ACC, but because of the injury to their quarterback, Jordan Travis, late in the year, they were left out of the college football playoff. There were 15, Joe, Power 5 undefeated conference champs in the 10-year history of the four-team format of the college football playoff era. Florida State, the only one of those 15 to not reach the CFP. So a lot will be expected for the Noles, given how last year ended and what can be expected this year around. How do you think it starts on that first Saturday in Dublin?
Well, I think it'll be a competitive game, a lot more competitive than what we had last year in Notre Dame and Navy, where Navy didn't show up and got blown out the second half, and Notre Dame covered the 20.5-point number. I think Florida State might be in a game. Now, I do believe Florida State's the better team, but Brent Key has done a fantastic job in terms of elevating Georgia Tech at least back to respectability from where Paul Johnson had it. He does have one of the above-average quarterback in terms of Haynes King that's just as athletic as Jackson Dart and a host of other mobile RPO quarterbacks within college football. He can run it. He can throw it. That defense returns six starters. I think in the end, Florida State does win and cover the number, but it's not going to be easy. I think there's going to be points aplenty in this matchup because I think both offenses can eat, Ben.
Yeah, I would, Joe, look at this game and think that we might also see some points. I think one of the staples for FSU as this year begins was almost a representation of how last year came to a close. Of course, a lot of people said, okay, Florida State, you didn't make it to the college football playoff. Prove you should have been there, which is not exactly what a bowl game is supposed to do. That is a reward for how a year ended, not the deserving prize to continue to further prove what you are capable of. And everybody pretty much opted out for the Seminoles. They lost by 60, not even a figure of speech. They lost by 60 against the Georgia Bulldogs in the Orange Bowl. So people were like, really? This team? Everybody was so mad they didn't make the college football playoff. Again, two different arguments. A team that should have been rewarded for what they got, not having to prove it any time further. But I think the biggest thing for FSU, Joe, was kind of that representation of the Orange Bowl. They had so many people opt out, but so many of those kids that opted out were doing so because they were declaring for the NFL draft. Keon Coleman, Johnny Wilson, Trey Benson, the list goes on and on. Jared Verse on the other side of the football. Jordan Travis, of course, was injured for the remainder of that season. And a lot of those guys are now gone. So much regression in terms of the overall production from a season ago that Mike Norvell has to figure out and figure out quickly.
He does, and again, I think Mike Norvell will figure it out. How quickly does DJU come and evolve in the offense, right? Jordan Travis was, again, a much maligned quarterback in his early tenure in Florida State, gave way. He stuck it out and really had success in years, junior and senior years leading up to last season, right? He elevated once Mike Norvell was potentially on the hot seat 3 years ago, but again, they were able to run the football much more consistently. That's what started the transition. The offensive line got much stronger. Mm-hmm. Defensive line has come on. I talked about it last 2 years. They've had a top 20 draft pick in the NFL, Jared Verse this year, and 2 years ago, Jermaine Johnson. So as long as they run the football, they're going to win games.
Only 56% of the production from last year for the Noles does return into 2024. We'll take a look at what that means for Florida State and how things play out for the Seminoles and what is expected following that Dublin debut next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC, the Dublin debut to start off a new college football season. That's Georgia Tech and Florida State on August 24th, exactly 2 months from today, over in Ireland. 12.5-point favorite FSU for that game, an ACC opener against the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech. 53.5 is that over under. Lisa Guy, we talked about Florida State, and of course the target that will be on their backs is the champions of the ACC, and what happened to end the 10-year history of the 4-team format of the college football playoff now in this new 12-team era. We said only 56% of the production from last year's team that was a perfect 13-0 and an ACC champ as that regular season and conference championship weekend ended out is back. So, as we look at that, sure, there's a couple of names that do leave for FSU, but there's some names, of course, that people should know that do enter in as well. Namely, a quarterback that returns to the Atlantic Coast Conference, DJ Uiagalelei, the quarterback formerly of Clemson and Oregon State, that returns to FSU. Roydell Williams, the running back who last year was at Alabama, now in Tallahassee. There is still a lot of talent on this Florida State roster.
Yeah, there are, and they got two starters back on the offensive line, so that matters as well. And Roydell Williams could be a lightning in a bottle, right? An explosive running back utilized in terms of the running back by committee by Nick Saban at the end of the regular season. Didn't really play in regards to the SEC championship game for the most part. Wasn't utilized and decided to transfer out after the end of the regular season. But he, again, is an explosive back. I actually think it might be an upgrade. Think he's a little bit more explosive than what Trey Benson was in regards to this offense. You know, the wide receivers are there. Malik Benson is a senior. He comes back. Williams, another big play wide receiver. Again, how does DJU evolve in the offense? Last year with Jonathan Smith, he threw 21 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. They had a very balanced offense, similar to Oregon State, to what Mike Norvell likes to run here in Tallahassee. So, again, it shouldn't be that big of a transition. Defensively as well, Marvin Jones Jr. is a stud in regards to the defensive end position. We saw Jermaine Johnson go to the NFL. We saw Jared Verse go to the NFL in regards to first-round talent. Marvin Jones could be the third straight in regards to that front seven for Florida State. If they could stop the run the way they did the past couple of seasons, they're going to be there, Ben. Secondary's been phenomenal over the past couple of seasons under Norvell as well. So, again, I still like their chances to win the ACC, and I'll talk big picture, 28-1 to win it all. I know it's a long shot, but again, we're talking about a team that was undefeated, and they have very good odds to make the playoffs at plus 154. I'm buying in.
And listen, and Lisa Guy, I would just say, I don't even think it's that long of a shot because of how the structure of the 12-team format of the college football playoff is going to work, right? If you are a power conference champ, more than likely you are going to be one of the five highest-ranked conference champs, more than likely one of the four highest-ranked conference champions who can earn that opening round bye to the college football playoff. And sure, you won't host the game, but you'll be there in the quarterfinal round. So if that's the case, Lisa, and I do really think there is a path for it. Florida State, as of this moment, is the favorite to win the ACC at plus 270. In a group of three, really separated by just under $2 at the top, that's FSU, Clemson, and Miami. All three teams have a win total of 9.5, but Florida State is the only one that has juice on the over and hefty juice on the over. You would think that is an advantage to be one of the two teams to play in the ACC championship game and gives FSU the edge. And we have talked a lot about all the talent they have lost, but I really do believe in this team. Marvin Jones, the transfer from Georgia right over there. On opposite sides, Joe, there's a really good chance that Marvin Jones and Patrick Payton, who's the other edge rusher that returned to Tallahassee this offseason when he was maybe floating some of those NFL draft waters, that those two guys could be as fearsome of a tandem as edge rushers in the ACC, maybe college football, as you will find. I believe Florida State is the correct selection at plus 270, but I do think, Joe, knowing where Florida State stands, right? Favorites of the ACC, one of the 12 best prices to win a national championship, best number out of this conference to win or to make the college football playoff, rather. And I know the game is in Dublin, but being less than a 2-touchdown favorite against Georgia Tech is interesting. But then you look at what Brent Key has done the last few years, taking over as the interim head coach, became the permanent head coach last year. Georgia Tech was a great team against the spread last year, 9-4 against the number. Highly competitive as an underdog in ACC play, even that final week of the regular season against their in-state foes in Georgia, losing by just a single score as a hefty underdog against the Dogs. This Georgia Tech team's not half bad either.
No, they're not. And Georgia Tech went toe-to-toe. Look at the end of the regular season where Georgia, right before the SEC championship,
right,
game, they put
for
up
sure
23 on that Georgia defense, right? They were 26.5-point dogs, I believe, in that rivalry game. They went toe-to-toe with Ole Miss.
Yeah.
They had Ole Miss on life support in the second half before Jackson Dart pulled out 3 touchdowns in the last 5 minutes to cover that ball game. And those are two very elite teams in regards to the SEC this year. They return a ton of talent offensively and defensively, and when you have a trigger man like Haynes King that can sure do it all, as long as he stays healthy, they're going to be there. Again, I love the total in this game because, again,
yeah,
you're going to need at least 30 to win that game in Dublin. I'm sorry. Expecting a very low-scoring game right from the get-go with both of those quarterbacks, I don't see it.
Yep. And Lisa, guy, this ain't Navy in Notre Dame last year, right, where Navy scored 3 points against a stout Notre Dame team. This is going to be what I think is a really high-scoring football game as well. And I think Florida State and Roydell Williams in his debut in a Florida State uniform can put up some numbers. Georgia Tech had one of the 10 worst rushing defenses in all of the country. You would expect and hope for some year-over-year defensive improvements along that front for the Yellow Jackets. But let's just say that's not the case. And even against a talented Roydell Williams and this Florida State team, I would expect that I will be keeping an eye on whatever his rushing yards prop ends up being for that Dublin debut 2 weeks from now. Again, Georgia Tech last year as an underdog, really good against the spread. I do find it fascinating that Florida State, the favorite to win the ACC, is not more than a 2-touchdown favorite, but under that number of just 12.5. But that speaks to what Georgia Tech did a season ago. It really does. 7-2 against the spread, Lisa guy, as an underdog last year. A ton of that coming in ACC play, covering by an average margin of 12 points per game. That's how good they were as an underdog. And I think it speaks to what the Yellow Jackets are expected to do. Maybe not a team that's going to win the ACC or contend for a conference crown or 8 or 9 wins, but certainly a bowl-eligible team that will be a pesky conference foe.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Brent Key has done a fantastic job.
Didn't
look like a great hire at the beginning. But again, you know, the consistency, he's built it from the inside out. They're much more disciplined defensively. Again, he got Haynes King, a much maligned quarterback from Texas A&M that didn't live up to expectations. And he's shining in the system. Just think of Haynes King couldn't evolve in Jimbo Fisher's offense. He goes to Brent Key and Georgia Tech that was just trying to get out of them the conundrum of the triple option, and he's evolved this offense. They're averaging well over 28 points per game at the end of the regular season. So again, I think this offense can hum. They potentially could be an 8-win football team this year.
5.5 the win total for the Yellow Jackets. The under has the juice for Georgia Tech. I wouldn't mind sprinkling on the plus money. Pretty much what you're betting on is Georgia Tech being bowl eligible. They were a season ago, 6 regular season wins, booked as an underdog for almost every game in ACC play, and we shared the ATS record. Should be a really good Dublin debut, but it's not the only game exactly 2 months out in week 0 of the college football season. SMU, now a conference rival of both Florida State and Georgia Tech. We'll talk about that idea up next for the Mustangs entering a new venture in 2024 and their season opener 2 months from today against the Nevada Wolfpack. That's next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're live right here on Football Full Circle. It is FFC, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Let's keep it going around a date that is just 2 weeks away. That's week zero. 2 weeks, 2 months away. That is week zero of the college football season in 2024. Again, a limited slate as compared to the last few years. Only four games that feature an FBS team. We talked about the Dublin debut at Aviva Stadium in Ireland between Florida State and Georgia Tech. Their ACC programs. So is SMU. I know. SMU, an ACC team. 23.5. That's the spread in favor of the Mustangs as they take a road trip to Nevada to open up the season. The Wolfpack, not the team that you probably remember from a few years ago in the Mountain West. Just two wins each of the past two seasons, Joe, for this Wolfpack team that saw the firing of Ken Wilson at the end of last season. Jeff Choate, who worked the last couple of years in the defensive staff of the Texas Longhorns, helped reinvigorate a Texas defense over the past few seasons. The co-defensive coordinator, linebackers coach, he is now the new head man at Nevada. Had some success at the FCS level with Montana State as well. Not sure it's supposed to be much better for the Wolfpack to start this year. It's why SMU is more than a three-score favorite.
Yeah, I mean, SMU, you know, three scores is still tough in an opening week football game, right? Especially when you're given 5 months of preparation for a new head coach looking, obviously, to, you know, make dividends and hit the ground running, right? You want to try and get as much optimism surrounding your program, get as much early wins as possible, potentially to become bowl eligible for the Nevada Wolfpack, right? That's got to be the expectations in year number one. Right. But, I mean, that aside, I think Rhett Lashley did a fantastic job in regards to this team. And Preston Stone comes back. He was my... It's not just the offensive explosiveness. They averaged 38 points per game. That defense, Ben, was one of the best in college football last year. They only gave up 17 points per game. They only gave up 121 rushing yards per game. You think SMU, you think Ben, but don't break type of defense. That defense carried them last year. So, again, you know, in ACC play, they might be sneaky good early. They have athletic talent. They have seven starters coming back on the defensive side. Out of the ball. Again, they forced turnovers early with the way Preston Stone can play and throw it all over the yard. They can surprise some teams. You know what I'm saying? So, again, I think early on, I'd probably take the 21 just because it is, you know, new conference, new things changing, new head coach. You don't know what to expect. I'd probably take the 21 with Nevada, but SMU, big picture, could be a very good sleeper in the ACC this year.
It will be really interesting, Joe, because this is a different level of competition week in, week out for SMU. There is no doubt about it. And the newcomers that we saw last year into the Big 12, making that jump from the Group of Five to the Power Five, did struggle. When you look at BYU, UCF, for in large part, had a decent year, but BYU, Cincinnati even, struggling to really hold their weight, Houston within the Big 12. I wonder what it will be for SMU. Now, this is not conference realignment like power conference schools like we're going to see from the Pac-12 to the Big 10, the Big 12, and of course Oklahoma and Texas making the move to the SEC. This is a different level of competition. You could argue the same for some of the other schools week in, week out, but they do play at the power conference level. That's where their programs had been the last few years. SMU has not been a member of a power conference, and they are desperate to be on that tier of college football. Look at what Rhett Lashley did a year ago. Perfect in the American. 9-0, a conference title with a victory over Tulane, an 11-win season for the Mustangs. He had a 7-5 season in the regular season the year prior to that, 7-6 overall. For his first year as a head coach, taking over for Sonny Dykes, of course, that saw great success at SMU, that landed him the TCU job. And, of course, we know what happened for the Horned Frogs in the 2022 college football campaign. An SMU team, Joe, that even including 2020, when they only played 10 games, they've won 7 games or more in 5 straight seasons. That's incredibly impressive to have that year-over-year consistency and success at the college football level. How will it look now in the ACC? Of course, that's a different question. But I think they really have the bedrock, if you will, to have success as they make this next move.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. And again, you know, he has the type of offensive mind, Rhett Lashley, to really challenge some teams. You know, there's some teams in the ACC that are plotters. You know, I want to say NC State and Boston College, where even though Bill O'Brien's there, that offensively they're challenged right now. And that's an offense in terms of SMU that can score on anybody, especially when, you know, Preston Stone has time. We're talking about one of the most prolific quarterbacks in FBS when he was in there. Again, I believe SMU can be that sleeper just because of the way the defense played. Again, you know, Rhett Lashley has ties to the SEC, coached in big games as a coordinator at Auburn, has stepped up. I mean, you just look at Preston Stone last year, Ben, 28 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, over 3,000 yards. I mean, there's they have 7 starters coming back on offense as well. He has his top 2 leading wide receivers coming back. This game shouldn't be the challenge. The challenge is, what do they do against the middle of the road teams in the conference? What do they do against the North Carolinas and the Virginias? If they could beat them right out of the gate, they have a step up. And again, are they going to potentially challenge for an ACC championship this year? No, not in my opinion. But again, being an 8-win football team in year number 1 wouldn't be a bad first year in the conference.
Not at all. And when you look at their win total for this upcoming season, listen, you don't know how this new look ACC is going to play out, but the Stangs have a win total, Joe, 7.5. And the over is heavily juiced at -176. So that 8-win threshold that you were just discussing, I mean, that's an opportunity for SMU to at least be in title consideration when things are said and done. It will be the top 2 win percentages, of course, out of the ACC that reach that conference championship game. Could SMU in its first year get there? Maybe so. And I'm going to use SMU to make a further point on the other side of the break here that I think really highlights the beauty of the 12-team era of the college football playoff that begins in just 2 months. We'll talk about that up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. Now, we just were discussing SMU, who opens up the college football campaign on the first Saturday of the year. That's exactly 2 months away. August 24th, today being June 24th, the Mustangs will travel to Reno to take on Nevada. And SMU, Joe, is now no longer a Group of 5 team, a non-power conference team. But last year in the American, they were a perfect representation of what the 12-team college football playoff format and the debate around these 12 selections is going to look like. Because, Joe, SMU was 11-2 last year, perfect in the American, handled Tulane in a conference championship game where they knocked off the Green Wave. And SMU, Joe, had 2 losses last year, out-of-conference, non-conference slate, against 2 teams out of the Big 12. Oklahoma, they lost that game by 2 scores, but did cover as close to a 3-score underdog, and against TCU. And, Joe, those 2 losses against Big 12 foes, not damning by any means. And it would have created, had there been a debate, a wonderful discussion between should SMU or an unbeaten perfect Liberty team in Conference USA, who does not necessarily have as strong of a scheduling metric of that of the AAC, who would have been the team to earn that automatic berth out of a non-power conference champ. And SMU did not get that chance, and it was Liberty that got to go to the New Year's Six to take on Oregon, where they got shell-shocked by the Ducks, and it was almost an afterthought. All right, cool. We picked the 4 teams in the college football playoff. There was such debate with Florida State, should they have been in, should they not, that nobody really cared about this other debate. But now those debates have more life, and that's what I can't wait for.
Yeah. Yeah, me as well. And, you know, they lost to Oklahoma in Norman last year by only 17 points, second game out of the gate. Again, they played a very good schedule. Tulane, they knocked off. Tulane was a very physical team last year. They beat them by 12. They were undefeated at home, Ben. So, again, you know, you travel to SMU, you better buckle up because you're going to be in for a dogfight again. And, you know, you're talking about a team that is very confident. And when you look at the ACC as a whole, outside the big three right now, you know, and we're throwing Miami in there, okay? But outside Clemson, Florida State, and Miami, you got a handful of teams that could be knocked off any given Saturday, right? There's nobody that really wows you. Pittsburgh, you know, 1 year up, 1 year down. We believe Brent Pry and Drones have it going for Virginia Tech, but there's no guarantee they're going to win 10 games either. So any team could be knocked off. Why can't SMU be that third best team potentially in the conference behind Florida State and Clemson, especially when you have a defense that had stepped up and really shut down a lot of high octane offenses throughout the regular season? There were six games where they held opponents under 17 points. That's unheard of in today's college football.
One of the best defenses in the country a season ago. And that would have been a great debate for last year's Group of Five champion that would have been in the college football playoff in the 12-team format. And that will be an accomplishment and a distinction that will come with a lot of pride this upcoming 2024 college football season. Last week, Joe, we debated the teams that might be in the running once again. Liberty has the shortest price of the Group of Five schools to make the college football playoff, not far behind them. Teams like Boise State, teams out of the American as well, like Memphis. These are going to be the fun conversations we get to have. It's all part of the excitement, Joe, as we build to 2024.
It is. Again, you know, and this is why expansion matters in regards to the big picture, because we're talking SMU. Last year, we would say no shot to potentially make the college football playoff. They're a 10-2 ACC team that has, let's say, three top 25 wins under their belt. Guess what? They're going to be involved in the conversation, and that's all we care about, right? Let's find value, and let's see how it plays out throughout the regular season.
Absolutely so. And there will be value to be had. If there is a spot that somebody needs to punch, if there is a ticket that awaits one of these teams, you can paint a path to multiple areas of cashing a ticket, whether it's a win total, whether it's a conference championship price, whether it is a college football playoff number to reach the CFP. We don't care if they get routed in the first game. If they get there and cash a plus 600 ticket, we will say thank you very much. That is the beauty of what is ahead in the 2024 college football season, which officially as of today is just 2 months away. June 24th and soon August 24th will be here. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. Football Full Circle returns tomorrow, noon Eastern time, here on Sports Grid Radio.